My name is Ryan Miller, and I've spent the last 15 years helping hundreds of people just like you to raise millions of dollars for their funds and for their startups. I am on a mission to help investors and founders to create new jobs, extreme wealth, and the dream life they deserve. Join me as we peel back the curtains and explore fresh ideas and dynamic personalities as we all move toward our dreams of making billions. Let's get into it. In this episode, we round out our two-part legal series by discussing the one thing that crypto, cannabis, and litigation finance all have in common. You don't want to miss it. Plus, Stephen Hutler uses his international legal expertise on structuring your finances like a billionaire. Join us as he introduces these three emerging asset classes and tells us how billionaires are exploiting the one thing they all have in common. And in so doing, ultimately supports you in your pursuit of making billions. Here we go. Hey, welcome to another episode of Making Billions. I'm your host, Ryan Miller, and today we have a special guest. We have him on again. We're rounding out our two-part series on legal. So I have my friend Stephen Hutler to talk about something very interesting that you and I were speaking about earlier, which was crypto, cannabis, and litigation finance, and more importantly, what the heck do these things even have in common? So welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thank you. Excited to talk about this.
Yeah. So Stephen, for those of you who weren't privy to the first introduction to him on our previous episode, Stephen is a partner at Sadis Goldberg out of New York. So you're a fund and international finance and fund expert used by millionaires and billionaires around the world. So we're very fortunate to have a brilliant mind like yours on the show.
Thank you.
So here we are. We're talking about crypto, cannabis, and litigation finance. Maybe help us understand exactly what is this concept that you and I were talking about, and maybe bring our listeners up to speed on this.
It's fun. It's fun to talk about what are the sexy areas in the investment world right now,
yeah,
in the last couple of years. And I put this this thought piece together some time ago, and I'm really excited to share it with your listeners as well. But sure, what's interesting about all these things, before we get into what they are in detail, is that they're all on the frontiers of the investment world, and they all have, you know, very special legal and business sensitivities because they're so new and they're so exciting. But I think what they have in common is that they have these, you know, each of them have their special issues, but they're very similar, as we'll soon see. And what's probably more exciting to say about all of them is that they're a place where a lot of millions and billions are being made right now.
Yes. And that's kind of the subject of the show, making billions. So this is one of those asset classes, or we might, dare I say, frontier finance, where, you know, we're really on the frontier, not only in finance, but legalities. And for those who are brave enough to take on that new frontier, there's lots of capital not only to be raised, businesses to be started, but also just capital to be made by other investors as well. So we're gonna round out some of those thoughts and really get some of your wisdom from that as well. So what can you tell us a little bit about crypto, about cannabis, litigation finance? Kind of bring us up to speed on what you're thinking on this.
Sure. So, you know, I put together some notes that I want to share with you on the subject.
Sure.
And I think it's fun and useful to think about the history of how these things evolved and how they became what they are.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we don't have to say a lot about crypto because you're covering it on a lot of your other sessions.
I think that's
probably fair enough to say from the legal and maybe to some extent from the business perspective, there's three or four different ways to pursue crypto. You can do it, you know, people are issuing crypto tokens, and those tokens can either be quasi-securities, quasi-commodities, like they're for real assets.
Mm-hmm.
And they, in addition to that, there are funds that are being started to invest in them. So there's a lot of different ways in which you can get exposure to this asset class. And, you know, I don't want to steal too much thunder from some of the other sessions.
We got a good guest coming.
I'm gonna leave it there. Yeah.
But you're really good at helping people with the navigating the legalities, but also, and I'm sure you'll get into this in a bit, but one of the things is not only navigating the legalities, but also the regulation. In some of these areas as well. So that I think that's where a lot of opportunity exists, and someone like you that they're able to bring onto to their team can kind of help them navigate some of these regulatory things that are coming or going. And that's, I would venture to say, that's where a lot of this opportunity is. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. And that's what
the dynamic that regulation is playing on these three asset classes.
So three totally dissimilar asset classes, right? One is kind of a financial play, a financial instrument, a very unique one. One is something that people inhale, or cannabinoids, people do things with.
It's consume,
something
yeah.
that has not been legal for decades, and all of a sudden is working its way back into people's consciousness as a legal and helpful thing. And then you have this litigation financing, which is all the way out there, which is, you know, how do I invest and get exposure to litigation in a positive way? So what do these strange things have in common? Like we said before, what they have in common, all three of them, is that they are all legally risky, developing very quickly. The businesses are business models are developing around them. And there's all tremendous upside, you know, in all these three areas. So, you know, I thought it might be interesting for folks to hear a little bit more about the cannabis industry, you know. We talked about this because you're a Canadian. I'm an American.
Yes.
You know, this is one of those few areas in which our countries have such a different history. I myself had to go through something of an epiphany. There was, I think, a New York Times article about 5 or 6 years ago describing the history of the prohibition of marijuana in the U.S. And a lot of it, someone argued very persuasively, had to do with kind of, you know, racism, you know, minority racism, and that it was, why should it be any different than alcohol or many other things that people, or tobacco, or that the people imbibe all the time. And that persuaded me, that seemed very, very powerful to me.
Yeah.
And then subsequently, just a little on a personal note, I had two family members who were both battling cancer in the early 10s, and both of them benefited tremendously from medical marijuana. So,
It's good for helping people with nausea, cancer patients going through some pretty intense treatments.
It's there are cannabis PE and VC funds that do nothing but.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very exciting. And, you know, I would say that for the most part, people pursue it in PE type structures because there aren't that many public companies, you know, yet because of the regulatory issues in the U.S., which we'll get more into.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the asset class in the U.S.
Okay. And for those listeners who may be new to the show, PE, and we say PE, VC, private equity, venture capital.
I apologize for that. But private equity, venture capital,
For
all you would-be billionaires, but will-be billionaires.
The up-and-comers,
Exactly. These are terms that you're going to know better than me in some point in this very short term. But that's the terminology.
And
you know, to go over briefly what litigation finance is, it's kind of fun to talk about this for me because I'm a history buff, a history nerd.
Yeah.
Our Anglo-Saxon litigation system where we have adversarial, people go to court, they go to a judge, sometimes they go in front of a jury, they try to convince people, and each one argues their case. That system goes back like, you know, 1,000 years in England, and arguably more. And there has always been a concern that people not stir up unnecessary fighting. Mm-hmm. And so there were common law prohibitions, there were legal concepts that said, don't start a fight between people. And that meant do not put money, don't give money to someone to stir up a litigation, and don't do other things to stir up litigation. And it turns out, as we'll get into, the fact of the matter is that sometimes, although it sounds like a very, very obvious thing, a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Especially, again, U.S. and Canada are a little different in this regard. U.S. considered a very litigious place. It sounds inherently like a good thing not to want to stir up litigation, but there actually are scenarios for public policy reasons where it's really wonderful, strangely enough, to be able to support people in their litigation. And we can get into that. You, I mean, maybe okay. You want to talk about that now, like the sort of the public.
Yeah. So wait. So are you saying then that there is a business right now that people are making money financing certain lawsuits, and so using my finance, it's essentially like buying a futures on the settlement price or whatever the settlement value of this. And so there are people now building investment, say funds, but just maybe personally investing. And I think what I'm hearing is that was kind of not really welcomed type of behavior, but now it's actually starting to become quite common where people litigation finance or investing, you're literally buying the future outcome through an early investment, either pre or post settlement. Is that?
That's right. That's right. And I love to talk about this particular topic. I like all three of these topics very much because they're so interesting to work on as a lawyer, because if you like to do creative things, these are very creative asset classes.
Very creative. Holy, no idea.
This litigation finance gig, there have been companies like Wentworth and Lawcast. You may have heard them, you know, in the middle of the night when you couldn't sleep and you're watching TV and someone says, hey, did you trip and fall? Do you have a lawsuit? Do you need money? And it turns out that people who are indigent or poor or even some, you know, middle class folks, we trip, we fall, you know, some of us could use some, you know, capital to get us through those situations as well. And that's why I believe in 45 after 50 state out of 50 states, it's regulated. It's not prohibited anymore. So that tells you something about the realization of people that this is actually a social good if it's done the right way. Like anything else, you know, people say, oh, that's such an ugly asset class. But then, you know, you say, I say to people, are there bad broker-dealer representatives? Are there people in the insurance business who don't do things that are the right way? It's not a question of whether an asset class is bad. The question is, I don't think anybody would argue that we should get rid of insurance because they're bad insurance brokers, or we should stop helping people invest in the stock market because there are some ugly people that are broker-dealer representatives. It's a matter of regulation and enforcement of their regulation. And then the same thing with this litigation finance thing, which is that there are scenarios in which they are so important and so helpful. Let me give you one.
Sure.
Because I love them. These are so, you can see I'm coming very alive with this topic. You came up with a brilliant idea. I mean, there's so many stories like this, anecdotally. Someone came up with the air conditioner or, you know, the first vacuum cleaner. God knows who it was. By the way, some people would argue that the electricity, right? The difference between Edison and Tesla, right? The same thing that Tesla arguably had the idea and it was Edison who kind of made use of it.
Sure.
There are many great ideas in the history of inventions in the industrial and post-industrial world that we live in that were pioneered by people had ideas and they didn't pursue it, or they got themselves some intellectual property protection. And then someone gigantic, you know, Google, Apple, Microsoft, you know, Facebook, somebody really much bigger than them had the same idea or took the idea and said, you know, go challenge me. I have $100 million budget. I have $1 billion legal budget.
Exactly.
And what this does is it levels the playing field and it allows people to say, I can actually challenge. There'll be some resources for me to challenge that unfair result.
Awesome.
Same thing with a toxic tort. We were talking about, you know, things like vaginal mesh. That was
a big lawsuit
device, right? Mm-hmm. Big lawsuits on that topic, and you know, law firms and individuals were able to monetize their positions. People who had lung cancer from working with asbestos. Some of them were dying, and they could use the money before it wound through years of litigation. So the litigation finance was a solution to all these different scenarios and many others that I could tell you, you know, spend an hour talking about just that alone.
Wow. So it almost, so what you said, I got goosebumps. So what you said, literally, this is a financial instrument or invention that essentially has the power to take the scales of justice and balance them a little bit out. Right. If it's kind of a, as you know, overused analogy, the David and Goliath moment where, right. you know, someone really was hurt by a larger company, but doesn't have the capital. And before this litigation finance existed, sounds like, you're kind of screwed. Like, these guys are going to outspend you. They're going to drag you out until you cry uncle and you just give in.
That's right.
But now you have this other option where you can kind of fundraise and, you know, just like fundraising for an investment or a fund, and you give them a piece of the back end profit of the exit. It's the same kind of concept, but really the beauty of this, from what I'm getting from you, is it has the ability to help the little guy.
That's right. And that's why, as I said, many states, it's actually regulated. And that's a sign. Mm. That's a sign that regulators and politicians realize that there's something good about it.
Yeah.
Because it would be the easiest thing in the world to accede to big corporations and insurance companies and say, you know what, the hell with this.
Yeah.
But if the public needs it and there's pressure from the public, and to be a little skeptical, you know, obviously from the tort bar as well, but, you know, let's say the public represented by the tort bar, and I'm a corporate lawyer, so I have no, I have no personal, dog in this fight, as my Southern clients would say.
Yeah.
But that is the public policy good behind it, and if you want to keep the analogy going that we're talking about these three funny asset classes that have nothing to do with each other, you would argue that all three of them potentially have dramatic possible. Public policy implications. Cannabis. Yeah. I mean, I told you about, you know, two family members I had who were dying of cancer for whom this provided succor in their time of need. So I'm a convert. You know, I think that particularly medical uses, but there are many others that I think are very powerful and important. And, you know, the crypto, I don't want to, there is so much ink being spilled on the subject of, you know, to what extent crypto is a good or a bad thing, that I hesitate to weigh into it, because there's such great minds, you know, really, really having such widely different opinions. But it does seem, when you're watching this thing develop, this asset class, that something's out of the barn, some cow is out of the barn, it's not coming back, and that the world's never going to be the same. To me, it feels like this whole COVID period where we were in, you know, kind of locked down for 2 years.
Yeah.
It almost not quite is concurrent with this less organized world that crypto also looks at. And I think, to me, the post-COVID world is at least a partially crypto world.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
AI is changing the game of business. Will you be on the winning team? I'm Jordan Wilson, the host of the Everyday AI podcast, and your coach to help you learn the X's and O's of AI. Artificial intelligence isn't just a new player in the game, it's a new sport altogether. So if you don't quickly put AI into play, your competitors will run up the score. I've spent my whole life building winning teams, from coaching basketball to working with big players like Nike and Jordan Brand. My next move? Helping you win with Everyday AI. Listen wherever you get your podcasts or on everydayaipodcast.com. Let's tap into AI together and put points on the board.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. It's, to me, there's, again, another opportunity for the little guy. And,
that's right.
And it has certainly blessed a lot of people's lives. Now, from those opportunities, so we talked a little bit about crypto. What about some of the opportunities that you've seen or maybe can intuitively imagine for cannabis?
The cannabis area has become so diversified. It's kind of exciting. The cannabis... I mean, I'm looking at my notes here. We have so many different facets of the industry, whether it's cultivation, testing, pharmaceutical implications, which we talked about, transport, sales. We talked about the fact
banking.
That banking, exactly, that there's financial and fintech that really is very specifically focused on these kinds of
asset cannabis and
right similar types of drugs and substances, I guess is what I'm looking for, with uncertain legal status.
So it
has become so big and it is so pervasive that there are people who can specialize. There are banks in the country who are specializing in this area. And you told me, it was so interesting, about the CFO group that's been just created for this specific industry. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. There is a group out there that actually provides training. So as a former CFO, I kind of found that quite interesting. And yeah, there's groups out there that literally will train or maybe retrain as far as the intricacies go, as far as reporting in a highly regulated environment that it is now, a little more for you than it is for us, but still regulated in the right way. So, and to that point, this is something that was very fascinating to me as an emerging global commodity, as I like to call it, as there's your 25-cent word. And you know, I pictured a future where literally just like grain and other types of crops, this could potentially go in a lot of great directions. And one of the coolest things that I've seen so many neat developments.
Why couldn't it trade right next to pork bellies on some commodities?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like it has the ability to be a globally traded commodity. And if that is where it goes, and I deeply believe it is, then there is a massive upside for this. And one of the coolest things is, given that it is international, I remember it was a couple of years ago that there was a company that it was a Canadian company who creates the oils. They extract the oils from this. Speaking of opportunities, but they got into a joint venture. We talk about making deals on this show and just putting things together to create value, right? And so they actually would grow crops in Africa. So there are certain areas where you could grow and cultivate. And so they had this partnership where they were able to acquire the land and have it cultivated and have those crops grown and then shipped into Canada for the extraction process. And so you can see that the globalization of this is starting to really take root. The tax revenues that come from this, there's a lot. Canada, right? We love our taxes. So many positive opportunities that are coming, and we just scratched the surface. And this isn't necessarily a deep dive into those, but more of an introduction to the opportunities, but also some of the things that, from your perspective, that maybe potential investors or deal finders may need to consider, or even call you on for some of these sensitivities.
Yeah, strongly agreed. Once again, you see people focusing on it. As we said, there are funds that do nothing but, and there are companies that focus on, you know, the asset. And then there are so many companies that are focused on support systems, as we mentioned before. So for the people trying to make millions and billions, you know, who are very ambitious, who are on the show, I would definitely say that that there's a lot of opportunity in this asset class.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like we said, the regulation is kind of the opportunity and the risk.
That's right.
But more opportunity. It seems like you said, you had your own ideas of it and you've come around just seeing how it's helped other people's lives. You know, it's not this thing that people just escape reality. It's actually provides medicine and other positive things, not only for entrepreneurs to start positive businesses, but also in healthcare. And we had Dr. Lambert, who has made phenomenal discoveries in medicine using cannabinoids from extracted from the plants.
Exactly. And I have a client also who created a muscle. Apparently it has a lot of value in the community where people are really, really working out very hard and want to, be able to deal with side effects of sometimes pushing their body to the absolute limit, and cannabinoids seem to have a lot of application there too. So it's really exciting. There's constantly new things that are being applications for cannabinoid, for things that come from the cannabis plant.
That's awesome. Yeah. And Yeah. So to that point, a good friend of mine, Sebastian, he mentioned that CBD is non-psychoactive. His father has certain cancer, brain cancer, and he said it just picked him right up. And there's a lot of, you know, fantastic. Observational. Yeah.
How can you argue with that?
Things I mean, it's just, yeah.
It's almost any argument that anybody would make against it. Once you hear that, it's kind of hard to,
yeah,
in my mind,
go against it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, with, and while we're on the topic of opportunities in these alternative asset classes, we mentioned litigation finance, which is crazy. Like cannabis, crypto, you know, most people are reasonably aware, but litigation finance opportunities to make billions. Right?
You know,
maybe walk us through, you know, where do you see some of the opportunities right now and in the future for litigation finance?
And this is my favorite of the three, not because it has the most opportunity. They all have fantastic opportunity, but this is an area that I just have been involved in for so long. And I've been involved in all these asset classes. I would say as an early adapter to creating investment funds and companies and investment structures around them. So I feel very proud of that because that's part of what makes me unique as an attorney. I like to dive into things that are newer and figure them out and figure out how to bring them to the market. And litigation finance is certainly one of the ones that I got to, you know, quite early. I try to think about things conceptually to organize them in my brain. And when I do, I find that, you know, it's like, some people think visually. We ever talk about that, you know, you make little pictures in your mind or whatever. I find that very helpful. And what I thought of, litigation finance at one point, I wrote an article on this. And if any of your listeners are interested, reach out to me. I'd be happy to share it with them.
Yeah, we'll share your email in the description below.
So, you know, what I did basically was create a matrix to describe the litigation finance opportunity world, the opportunity sets. And you can make like a tic-tac-toe, you know, three-dimensional. And you have three inputs. And the inputs are, you know, what kind of case is it?
Yeah.
Who are you lending the money to? Who are you financing? And what stage in the case is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So let me expand on that a little bit because that may have gone pretty quickly by you. The first kind is, you know, there are a lot of the litigation world has gotten so big and so specialized, and there's so many billions of dollars in the asset class right now. You go to the events, there's no room in standing room only at the events that cover this asset class. So it can be done for, it started out probably with trip and fall, the early, you know, 15, 20 years ago, the people like Law Cash and Wentworth and others who I mentioned earlier, the people who help people who've hurt themselves and tripped or whatever, got in a car accident. Those are small, very small, sometimes very small. Those could be $5,000 each, you know. You have to have tremendous scale, obviously. You have to do 100,000 of those before you can really ramp up. And you can imagine what the issues are scaling those things. Then you have intellectual property. We talked about that, being able to sue the likes of Apple or Google or who, God knows who else.
Yeah.
You know, those are kind of very binary, but they're very big cases typically. They're not $5,000 each. Yeah. And then there's commercial litigation where two companies or people or two people have a commercial fight, and it's not necessarily any particular area, specific area of the law, but it's just, I've got a good case. I don't have the resources. A company may have this problem. A listed company may not have the resources to fight a particular case. And they may go to the litigation finance community and say, can you lend us some money? We think this is a winner. And finally, the another very big area is the toxic tort world.
Yeah.
And probably many of your listeners are aware that those are pursued in the U.S. legal system by specialist law firms who handle these things typically on contingency basis.
Yeah,
and they take all the risk. And sometimes the risk of the research on one of these big cases is so intense and so discovery intense that they need a lot of money and hence the opportunity to invest. So those are the different kinds of cases. Now, who will you give the money to? I mean, you can give it to the person fighting the litigation. You can give it to the law firm.
Yeah.
So that's the other part of the matrix, of the three-dimensional tic-tac-toe matrix, right? And then, of course, and this is really interesting, what stage is the case in? Because those of us who've ever been exposed to litigation, they know it goes through different stages. There's motion practice. You go to trial. If you, God forbid, if you end up having to go to trial. And then either a judge or a jury renders a verdict. But there could be a long time sometimes between the time that the verdict is rendered and the money's actually available to a litigant. And if right. someone's dying of cancer, or if someone is a football player and has, you know, had a problem with his, you know, with his brain injury or something, and there's money put aside by the NFL or whatever, and it takes time to get that money, people are often willing to say, you know what, you take it later, give me a big percentage of it now, and I'm happy. And so those are the three most important factors, I would argue. And if you put those three factors together, and you know, you can do post-settlement personal injury or pre-settlement commercial or toxic torts, post-judgment. And that's how you can think about the whole thing, I think, when you think about opportunities. And there are funds, I can tell you right now, that are experts in all the different categories.
Man, that's incredible. Wow. So you have a matrix, so our listeners can reach out to you if they want to see or learn a little bit more. So, back to what are some of the, we'll say, business concerns for a cryptocurrency blockchain? What are some of those business concerns that you can foresee?
Well, I think the ones on crypto are in the news every day, once again, right? I mean, I can tell you, I mean, we're going to get to this a little bit later. We'll talk about legal. But, you know, the discomfort with what's happening politically. Let's put aside legal for a second and just talk about how governments feel about crypto. I think they're scared witless, right?
Why do you think that is?
I think you just saw it in Canada, right, a few weeks ago, when government tried to shut down crypto efforts to send money to certain people who weren't popular, right?
Yeah.
It's a way to, and it's kind of very, what's the word, intentional, that the asset class was set up for this purpose.
Decentralized, absolutely.
Decentralized, right. And so I think people are scared. I think regulators are scared. I think people who exert different kinds of political and other control, I don't mean to sound like some kind of, super duper libertarian, but I think people that are used to having exerting a certain amount of control over different parts of the society and its economy are realizing that this has the tremendous destabilization implications
for them. Yeah.
Control.
Yeah. Recent development is that you actually have to now in Canada report who the buyer and the sender and the receiver is. So no more anonymous transfers. So they have to be able to link it back to you. So they're re-centralizing it, even though they say they're not. But.
Right.
So that anonymity benefit that exists, and that doesn't always mean people are shady characters. I mean, sometimes maybe.
Right.
But sometimes people have financial plans and certain things where they have trusts and, right. There's a lot of reasons, legit reasons, why anonymity needs to remain in place. And so that obviously got a little bit complicated. So we're starting to see the screws tighten a little bit, at least in north of you. So it'll be an interesting development for sure.
I think people are quite concerned. And whenever there is that kind of uncertainty around an asset class, I think there is always the possibility of some dramatic change that can make things a lot better or a lot worse. And we talked about that. And I think crypto,
that's where the opportunity is.
Though. Exactly.
Yeah. That's what we're talking about. We're saying like, well, it depends on, you know, how good are you at reading the proverbial tea leaves, so to speak. And do you, you know, which way do you believe the tides are going to change? And more importantly, because this isn't about right or wrong, this is about where are you positioning yourself in either direction, and with the right positioning, you might be able to make very very good return for either you or if you're a fund manager as a fund manager for your investor.
So I was on a phone call just to give you an example. I was on a phone call today with a client. And they wanted to do a deal for a company in East Asia, PPP company, and they want to bring it. They want to do an IPO
yeah.
on an East Asian market, on mm-hmm. A different country's exchange.
Yep.
And they were some of the investors, the wider group of investors on the phone with me and asking me, well, how do we get our arms around this? We don't understand why there's such great returns here. I mean, we're regular investors in the market. We don't yep. see people getting back 10 or 15, you know, times what they put into something in the public markets. And yeah. I said to them, well, that's a false analogy. I mean, that's not mm-hmm. a good analogy. The reason why people get these kinds of returns is not because it's just not analogous to a public company where, you know, there are certain challenges to the business plan. What you're looking at here is the regulatory environment and the legal environment, and getting your arms around that particular asset, that particular company, those particular people, that particular country,
yeah.
that particular country where the exchange is, and getting your arms around that and tackling it, right? And if you are able to run that to the ground, that's really, you know, it's almost like work. It's hard work. And if you put it in, I think it reduces the risk tremendously.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Know your investment, know what you're getting, you know the jockey and the horse, as I like
right,
to
right.
say.
Right, right. Yeah. That's right.
Because
like
you got to bet yeah. on both. So
exactly.
That's great. And
either one
about,
can bring you down. Right.
Yeah, you're right. So you need both to be working well together. So
right.
Now talk about perhaps some of the, since we're talking about business concerns, what are some of those business concerns in cannabis that you can see?
To look at my notes right now, I think that the obviously, you know, there is still a reputational issue,
yeah.
unfortunately, in the U.S. And there are certain organizations, particularly institutional ones, that are nervous about yeah. putting money into it. And you have to know, if you're out there, if you're one of your listeners that are capital raisers,
yeah.
or people, you know, looking to raise money for their own companies, their own funds, they have to be aware of their audience. And this is something that you and I have talked about a couple of times, you know, listen, yeah. understand your audience and so forth. And you have to understand that although maybe a more enlightened way to look at some of these asset classes and the public goods that they can do is pretty positive, not everyone's got there yet.
Right.
And to the extent that hasn't happened yet, you're fighting an uphill battle. And so you need to ask yourself when you're talking to somebody, is this the kind of person that might have a more enlightened view or more modern view or a risk-taking view about this particular subject? And there are many people who are not.
So that would be one of the key takeaways, is saying when you're involved or about to get involved, one of the things that you want to look at is kind of, at lack of a better term, counterparty risk, but just more in the, that means something different in finance, but more in the, who is the person that I'm talking to, and are they going to freak out? Are they warm to this concept? That's more what I mean. On the reputation side, and we went through that too up north, right? There was that large stigma. And then eventually a little more acceptance, right? There's early adopters and maybe they adopt a little too early, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But then, you know, then for the early majority started to say, okay, like maybe this isn't so bad, you know, and whatever it is, it's not always recreational, but people are starting to open up, and then you start to see more research and more funding for research and new research, whether it's a new distribution place or medicines, and you're really starting to see a lot of innovation take hold now that the reputational risk starts to go down.
And, you know, related to this topic of reputation, I think yeah. it's really kind of a knock-on implication. You know, some of the things that we talked about were access to banking, private and public resources, right?
Yeah. Yep.
That's an example. You know, they're having damnedest times. I mean, I was hearing from a lot of people in cannabinoid businesses or cannabis business that they, it's crazy. They were just walking around with suitcases of cash because they were going to put it.
They didn't know where to put it.
It's crazy. And it looks really sketchier in a sense that it really is, or sketchier than it should be because of what we talked about before and all the public policy goods, you know, that are involved. The difficulty in getting service providers, I think we talked about that. Maybe we touched on that. Maybe we touched on that before we got on the session here. Not all accounting firms will do crypto. Not all accounting firms will do cannabis.
Mm.
And many other, we talked about banks just a moment ago, but it's the same thing with professional service providers. Insurance, something you know a lot about.
A little bit, yep.
Can you get insurance on a cannabis business or, you know, on a crypto-related play? Not so easy, right? These are the people that don't really understand the risks that well, so they can't price them a lot of time in an intelligent way.
I would say that's putting downward pressure on the valuations these companies, which if you're a contrarian investor, sort of, this would allow you to kind of, or maybe you're a crazy man like me and you like venture capital and getting in early, this might represent an opportunity as well for a lot of venture capital, PEVC, as we've already opened up, as to say, well, valuations are actually really cheap relative to maybe like Canada, where the infrastructure is a little more established. And so you might, investors may have a very significant opportunity in crypto cannabis and litigation finance just with some of the headwinds. And then once those winds die down, and I think valuations will start to fly, and you'll be able to make a nice premium on some of your investments, your businesses, whatever that might be. Would you agree?
You know, these are all, it's like the coaches and the psychologists and the, you know, motivational people all over the world say, you know, these are either problems or challenges depending on your orientation towards them.
Yeah. These are all an opportunity.
Right. These are all barriers to entry. They're all problems. But because they're problems, if you have solutions to them, if you spend the time to work through them or found the people that have, then you're way ahead of a lot of your competition. Yeah. And it's a lot easier to compete because not everyone has the resources, the time, the effort, the patience to work through them.
Yeah. I love that. So, and what about some of the concerns with litigation finance? What are some of those challenges/opportunities that exist for maybe fund managers, founders, investors, you know, all the above? What are some of those concerns or maybe opportunities?
This is fun for me to focus on. Yeah. You know, one of my very astute clients pointed out that there's very chunky returns in this asset class. Think about it. It's kind of binary, right?
Yeah.
You know, some lawsuits you win or you lose. Yeah. You know, some lawsuits you might win more or less, but a lot of them, it's kind of a binary result. And that means that, you know, you're not going to have the same kind of steady in most of these asset classes. When you have a lot of scale, it's a one exception. And that's maybe a little bit more detail we need to get into. But the guys that have 10,000 or 100,000 different slip and fall cases, it's not as much of a concern, the chunkiness, even there, if they're all one lawsuit. But, you know, that's one concern. Origination for competition for origination, it's fierce out there.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's so much money sloshing around.
Deal flow. I mean, for any investor, like a professional one, other than hedge funds, but you know, any private equity venture capital, it's like
This reminds
where do we find the deals? We gotta have deal flow,
not
necessarily deal flow, but just good deals.
But, you know, thinking about it, this reminds me a little bit of the real estate finance fund and industry where people lend money to, you know, developers so they can finish the real estate projects. This has always been a very attractive asset class to me because of, you know, loan to value ratios and so forth. And what's interesting about that asset class is that it's very regional. People know they're builders and think construction works very different in different states and different cities.
Yeah.
Very different dynamics at work. And so you might discover that you have a greater expertise in a certain type of finance. You might know more lawyers in a particular city or a particular state. Not everyone in Wyoming and not everyone in, I'm just thinking of smaller states in Idaho, maybe in Louisiana, I don't know, is as knowledgeable about litigation finance as people maybe in New York or California. And that could be a tremendous opportunity for some of the folks who are listening, you know, on the phone. I can tell you that there are people who go around the country to try to evangelize on this topic. And if you get there first, there's a real first mover kind of advantage.
Awesome. Yeah. First mover advantage. I love it. Okay.
You know that there are people who, just to give you an idea of how interesting it gets, there are people who lend money to doctors who work on cases that are litigation-based in terms of how much they're going to get back, get paid the doctors. Yep. There's medical receivables, and there's even pharmaceutical receivables that are litigation, result-based. So if you get to the pharmacists in Alaska, maybe first, then maybe you might be on to, I don't know, billions, but certainly millions, you know? So
that's awesome. Yeah. So, rounding this out and as we kind of head to home base on the discussion here, what are some of the, so let's say the one guy or girl that's listening to this and they said, wow, that sounds pretty good. I think I wouldn't mind checking this out. What would be some of the key takeaways, key piece of advice that you could give to some of the listeners as far as, what should they look out for? Anything that they should do other than give you a call, obviously that one's implicit, but what are some of the key takeaways if someone's looking to make money or what parting advice would you give in some of these areas?
I think in the crypto area, I think in all these areas, it's important to find a lane and to start with it and stick to it and not get too diffuse and try to do too many things.
Right.
I spoke to an accounting firm that I work with very closely, and he told me that he's working on 80 audits for crypto funds in the next month. It's kind of not normal, right? I mean, it's just the opportunity. And clients come to me and they're right. I could do this. I could do that. I could focus on the ICOs. I could focus on, the real currencies, the ones that are trying to be currencies. I could focus on, what's going on overseas. And it can be very overwhelming. And I think people really need to focus and develop a expertise and something that sets them apart. When I spoke at a conference, I kind of joked about everyone's backstory. And one of the guys on my panel said to me, "What are you talking about backstories? It sounds like a Marvel movie or something." But I said, all these asset classes have backstories and all the individuals have interesting backstories. And I think your challenge is to figure out what they are and to glom onto one and just really execute. I have a client who is, just to give you an idea, I think this would be very interesting for your listeners. This man was a very successful manager of European stocks. Okay. He was a guy who ran north of a billion at one point for institutional investors. And he was also at a very big bank for many years.
Right.
Took off some time. Now he's in the litigation finance world. And now he's focused very specifically on one of those areas in the matrix. And when I tell him about this or that, he says, "I don't want to go elephant hunting. I just want to focus on this little narrow lane." So I think that's a really, really important area, to glom onto something that you think is unique and you can hopefully validate as unique or relatively unique, and then to execute on that. I think that's one of the most important things. I think the other thing as a lawyer is to understand that there's no shortcuts on the legal side to a lot of this. And in fact, even if you take the long road and you do the hard work and you spend the money and you spend the time to understand the legal risks, even then you won't have 100% confidence, because that's the nature of these asset classes.
Yeah.
So I think the second piece of advice that I would give people is don't skimp on understanding the legal risks, because that's where most of the risk is, or a very great part of the risk is.
That's kind of the play here, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what they have in common, going back to our theme. But even then, strangely enough, even if you put in all the time and you sort of pound the table and say, "Tell me what's right or wrong. I've spent enough on legal fees. I want to know what the answer is." The answer is not always going to be clear.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a nuanced point I'm making. But
that is the point, is saying it isn't clear, and that's the opportunity, is if you believe which direction clarity is going to be provided, and
that's right,
and then the subsequent policies after that,
that's right,
then then you'll be well situated in your pursuit of making billions. Well, that's enough for me and Stephen. We've taken plenty of your time. So understand these areas, some of these emerging asset classes, get clear on the regulation, the directions that they're going, according to Stephen's counsel, and you two will be well on your way in making billions. Wow, what a show. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Now, if you haven't done so already, be sure to leave a comment and review on new ideas and guests you want me to bring on for future episodes. Plus, why don't you head over to YouTube and see extra takes while you get to know our guests even better. And make sure to come back for our next episode where we dive even deeper into the people, the process, and the perspectives of both investors and founders. Until then, my friends, stay hungry, focus on your goals, and keep grinding towards your dream of making billions.